And the assumption is like, once I've got something under contract, everything's going to go super smooth.
Right.
And it's like, no, it's not.
I can't say how many times someone has heard something, you all think you heard the same thing, and everybody walks away with a different opinion about what was said.
So while your clients may be doing the up and down roller coaster, if you stay, steady and move towards the closing, it's going to go that much better for you.
You have to work well with the other agent. The other agent is your friend, not your enemy. Yeah. So many agents want to say that we're in competition. You're not. You want the same thing, exactly the same thing.
Because people don't buy their house because it's 3-bed, 2.5-bath, 2-car garage, right? They don't buy features. They buy their future life. All right, let's talk about the art of the deal, how to make a deal come together. And when you're first getting started as a real estate agent, it can be challenging because there are so many unknowns, there's so many variables, and you've got to work all these different angles to get this deal to come together. And if you don't have some of these solutions already baked, right, and you haven't done this before, it can feel completely overwhelming. So let's talk about how to make a deal together, come together, and the strategies that you need to employ. Okay, so first let's start. Contracts are written in black and white, but there's a lot of gray.
Ton of it.
A lot of gray. And, you know, I think people who are extremely analytical get kind of tied up in this portion of it because they want to spell everything out in terms of, you know, black and white, let's say everything. But there are conversations that have to happen. There's goodwill that has to be present in the deal. That's sort of an intangible. And there are all of these intangibles, right? And the X factor in all of them is human emotion. Because people don't buy their house because it's 3-bed, 2.5-bath, 2-car garage, right? They don't buy features. They buy their future life. And so when they're going through this process, like when somebody walks into a house, they're not thinking about, hey, does this meet my criteria? They're thinking, where do I put the Christmas tree? They're thinking, hey, where are we going to eat dinner? So they're buying their future life. They're thinking, like, how long is the commute to work? How long is, where are we going to take the kids to school? How big is the backyard? They are envisioning all of these intangibles, right? And so they're figuring all that out. And so there's not, you can't really factor all of that into a contract per se, right? You can't factor that into black and white. So there's all of that emotion. So you've got to be prepared for that.
Yeah. Highly emotional people. You go through some roller coasters on these deals and you might have a deal that's minutes away from busting. And then next thing you know, you're back on track and then minutes away from busting again. So if you feel like you need to ride that roller coaster, you're going to have some challenges. Yeah. I mean, you need to learn to spend some time in the middle.
Yeah. That's a good way to frame it. I think it, understanding that there is a roller coaster in the transaction of emotion, usually driven by emotion.
Especially newer agents.
Yeah.
I mean, newer agents, they get your first deal under contract, you're excited. Next thing you know, the inspection comes back and the buyer says, well, I'm thinking about backing out, you know, whatever. I found this or found that. And you're like, oh, I just lost my first deal. And then next thing you know, like, they're like, oh, we'll just need $1,000 in concessions. All right, we're back on track.
That's another good way to think about it because you're thinking like, hey, I am making and losing this money every time I have a negative conversation. And so you're like, oh, I just got this commission. I lost this commission. And the assumption is like, once I've got something under contract, everything's going to go super smooth.
Right.
And it's like, no, it's not. Guess what? That's the beginning of the challenges that you're going to face in the middle of this transaction.
And why it's so important for you as the agent is that if you think you're feeling it, your clients are feeling it tenfold. So your clients are pushing that emotional roller coaster onto you. And if you're not stable and sometimes experienced, this is where experience kind of helps you along with the journey with this. It's like, I've been through this before. I know what happens next. But it really, you have to be that rock for your client because if the client sees you panicking, you better bet that they're going to panic.
Yeah, you need a mentor. You need a guide. By the way, if you don't know about Six Figure School, click on the link in the show notes so you can find out about how you can get some more of that mentorship guidance. By the way, take some time to like and subscribe to this video. But often in this, you know, back and forth on this roller coaster, time is often the solution. So, you know, take a step back. Give yourself time to think. And so sometimes you might need to sit on something that's not helpful to the transaction because let's just say, for instance, we're in the negotiation and the client says, you tell them if they don't do this, we're not even going to get this deal to come together, right? You can tell them to go, you know, screw off or whatever, right? Yeah. Like they sometimes use colorful language, but that's not helpful, right? You're not preserving any goodwill. These things, you are pulling a deal together and you don't want to use language. You don't want to use, you know, communication techniques that are going to tick everybody off, right? You want to kind of keep it even keel, keep goodwill in the deal. And so sometimes you might need to omit or you might need to sit on something. And then the other thing is there's always going to be problems and they're typically going to hit you first thing in the morning, right? Everybody's like slept on it. They're waking up with whatever challenges and they text you, email you, all that stuff. Okay. You need to give yourself, give the problem time to solve itself because it may solve itself.
A lot of times it does. And certainly it's, the more time you give it, the less emotional it is. Like if it's just happened and you're sharing it with your clients immediately and then they're freaking out and then they're asking you to call the other agent. Like there's too much emotion right there in that minute. It needs to sit first.
By the way, that's a great way to kill a day. You know, it's like, you know, to completely destroy a day is if you start working problems first thing in the morning and you haven't given appropriate time for those things to settle. Again, there's those intangibles. And so, you know, if we get time for those emotions to settle, and I know we've talked about this before, but there are really basically three brains. You have three brains. Okay. There's a fight or flight. Okay. And that is like the, you know, panic button and that's where people are in the highest emotion. They get very defensive. Then that's overlaid with the emotional brain or your mammal brain. Okay. That's where the heavy emotion lies. So any sort of feelings that come around that fight or flight. And then the third brain, it's overlaid with a logic brain, primate brain. And that's where you get to the problem solving portion. But if you're talking to somebody when they're in panic mode or you're talking to someone when they're in high emotional state, it's going to be very difficult to get to a solution. Sometimes you just need to give everybody time to let the information settle. Attorneys are great at this, by the way.
Yeah.
They pull all the emotion out of it.
No question. Sometimes I think my logic brain is too big for my emotion brain to exist. But I honestly, that's a lot of the reasons why I don't immediately call clients as soon as something happens, because I want to give myself time to say, hey, here's what happened, but here's the three things that we can do about it.
Yeah.
Or four or whatever. And that way you're giving them options. They know there's some solutions, and it usually dulls that, you know, explosive emotion that you get if you present a problem without something like a solution.
Always, always fix the problem before you, or I'm sorry, let me say that again. Always, 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 okay, figure out the solution before you present the problem, okay? Or at least figure out options to the solution before you present the problem. Because if you present a problem and go, hey, this happened, I don't know.
Yeah, I'll give you a great example. This just happened to my wife and I. So we had a client, we were listing for them. First contract busted, a lot of reasons there. So sometimes you can't save a deal. But the first thing that happened coming out of the inspection was, you know, I had the reasons for the deal busting. I called a lot of my contractors to find out what this would cost to resolve some of these problems that busted the deal. And then called my client to say, hey, the deal's busted. These are the reasons. And this is how much it's going to cost to repair these three things. And they're like, oh, well, that's not that bad. Let's just repair them and move on. But if I had called them and said, you know, I don't know how much it's going to cost to do X, Y, Z, you know, they might be freaking out. They're like, is it 10,000 or is it 1,000? You know, and then that there's a lot of additional emotion there. And then they have time to sit on it while you're going to find the solutions and get more worried about it.
Here's what the dumb agent does. They go, hey guys, we got a problem. And I don't know, we need to figure out what we're going to do here.
Yeah,
right? It's like, that's stupid. Do not do that. Okay? You find, right? We're going to present the bad information with, or the problem or the challenge with the solutions together, right? Yeah. So that way we can move past it and continue on with the deal.
And sometimes you just can't save one, right? Like sometimes the person on the other side is too unreasonable or maybe wasn't quite ready to buy that house at that moment. And there's nothing you can do to save it. And that's okay. We're not, you know, we don't think that you can save every deal every time, but there's definitely things you can do, mistakes like that, that just it's going to kill a deal more often than not.
Yeah. Can we like sidebar a minute and talk about the dad, Right. Because dads come in to kill deals. That's what they do.
I think you knew that that was part of the reason they killed this deal.
Yeah. So let's sidebar for a second. Dad, by the way, the parents or the dad, especially the dad in inspection periods, they're there to kill the deal. And there is a way that you can handle this. Okay. Especially if you're on the buy side, because I'm sure even if you're the buyer's agent, you don't want your deal busted because every repair, there's a solution, right? We can fix anything. The fallacy is that like the house is in such bad shape that it can't be fixed and nothing's bad and you shouldn't buy this house. Right. And so it's like, when somebody's asking someone for advice, they have to give it to them. It's like, hey, I got this advice from someone and, hey, I want to see what you think about it. You never, like, people never go, yeah, that was pretty good advice.
Yeah.
No, they hear like, well, I would do this a little bit differently. Yeah. And that's what dads are there. They're flying in. Like they've been asked to, give their opinion. It's never going to be a good one.
Especially out of town dads. Local dads, I feel like they can come in and they'll say, oh, well, I can help you do this over a couple weekends and it'll be fine. Out of town dads are like, nah, we're busting this. And
that's so true. The out of town dad, it's like, he's just coming in to bust it.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, when they're a first time home buyer and the reason why I knew the dad busted this one is because everything that was presented at the end is totally out in the open. Like an agent, a person walking through the house all knew about these things before they wrote their contract.
Yes.
And we're totally fine with them. But then dad comes in to do things, you know, with them. And then all of a sudden it's busting. So it is what it is.
If you're a dad and you're listening to this, don't be that guy.
Yeah.
Okay. Because everything can be fixed. And so we present, you know, solutions to the problems. And there's very rarely is there anything that's not normal in the condition of these homes. It's not like there's, you know, I think there's some sort of assumption that, you know, if there's any mold, there's black mold and we're going to kill the deal. Or if there's like a, you know, a little crack in the wall, then that's a structural issue and this house is going to fall off the side of a cliff. Yeah. These problems can be solved. But if you are the buyer's agent, let me just give you a little hint here or a little tip. Okay. You want to lead the dad to the issues. So if that agent probably would have gone, hey, we knew about these before we got into this deal. Let me show you a couple of things here that we were concerned about. And just leave it to them. Just say, hey, what do you think about this? What do you think about this?
Yeah.
And that way you're not putting yourself against them. You're working with them to solve the problem. And it completely changes it from a psychological perspective, right? Because you're building rapport and trust.
Yep.
Because you've got to, by the way, you have to build rapport and trust with the dad all over again. It's like having a new client.
It's like, it becomes the client almost. Yeah. That's the one you've got to convince. But.
Okay. But again, back to, we sidebarred rabbit trail, but back to the sort of main point is, you might need time to figure out things yourself. Give yourself time when you get bad news. And also you're going to be in an emotional state because you're afraid you lost your commission. So give yourself time to calm down and present the solution. And this is a huge benefit of having a cooperative brokerage or a cooperative team is call your colleagues, call your mentor for different strategies or to help you come up with the solutions, right? Because if you've got a mentor that's there working with you, or a colleague that's got more experience than you, you guys can brainstorm and come up with solutions.
Yeah, you have to. I mean, how often has your mentor or a peer in your brokerage been through that scenario more than one time and you hadn't yet? It's an easy way to just say, hey, how did you handle this? Or what would you have done differently? That's a great question. I love that one because most often people have gone through it, but maybe there's a few things they would change. And if you just ask them, hey, how did yours play out? They might just give you an answer. But if you asked, what would you have done differently? They would say, hey, well, here's what I did, but here's a couple of things I could have done better.
Yeah, a lot of times agents in the industry, they're on an island and they feel like they got to figure out everything themselves and they're in competition with other agents. And that's what we did in our class in Home Price Pro. I'm like, hey, because we were teaching how to solve or basically how to price a home. And we were talking about how you and I, like we call each other. It's like, hey, comp this. What did you come up with? I'm going to just give you the address and let's see if we come up with close to the same number and why so we can have a discussion.
Yeah.
So we said, hey, get with these people, right, that are like-minded. And that way you have someone to bounce things off of, right? So build a little community of agents that you can bounce stuff off of.
Yeah, and we've comped thousands of homes. You don't think that we could totally comp it by ourselves, but what does it hurt to ask another experienced professional what they think and make sure that you're still in the right ballpark? It doesn't, you know, you just hurt your ego, I guess. That's it. But I mean, I always ask for advice, no matter if I think I've got the perfect answer. What does it hurt for me to take in one more data point?
Exactly. Exactly. All right. So on the communication strategy, when you are in the middle of a deal, first of all, you need to communicate often or set up benchmarks, which you're going to talk to clients, whether that's every Monday update, every Tuesday update, whatever it is, and set that expectation with your clients so that you can check in, because if they hear nothing, they're afraid something's going wrong.
Yep.
Okay. So you need to communicate often or set up that a weekly update at minimum. When you are, you know, brainstorming, figuring things out or working with the other agent, you want to have those don't have those conversations via text. Okay, because things can be misconstrued, things can be taken with the wrong tone. And if you can just talk with that other agent to brainstorm and work through solutions, understand where everybody's coming from, have them understand your client's perspective, that's going to be communicated back to their clients. So when you are brainstorming or coming up with these solutions, have those conversations so that you can have the point and counterpoint to the discussion, because those agents are really, they are the driving force and making the deal come together. And if you're communicating what your clients are going through or their perspective, that perspective can be taken back to that. By the way, that perspective cannot be done in an email, in a contract.
Yeah.
You can't take somebody's perspective and formalize it in a contract. And if you put it in a text, it's going to be taken the wrong way typically.
Yeah. And the verbal communication is also there to settle the emotion. Like if you just send a text with information, that's all it is. It's just strictly information. You have no way to get them from backing off a cliff or thinking that everything's crazy and we've got a big problem here. You need that verbal conversation to, you know, settle the situation.
You need that back and forth with your clients and with the agent on the other side. So once we have those things kind of dialed in and we've given ourselves time to think through potential solutions, then we can formalize with contractual language. But you need to give yourself time to talk through things, okay? So do have those conversations like over the phone, not via text. And then we can formalize those decisions with written communication, whether it be email, which by the way, if it's contractual, it needs to be on a contract. If it's you're formalizing what's going to be on a contract or what you've discussed, do that in an email. But I try to stay away from text as much as possible when we're actually talking about real estate deals.
Yeah. Honestly, if you've made any decisions over the phone, definitely follow up that up with an email. I mean, I can't say how many times someone has heard something, you all think you heard the same thing, and everybody walks away with a different opinion about what was said, and nobody's written it down, nobody's putting it in an email, and then everybody kind of walks away with different perspectives. And that is challenging to deal with, because you're like, well, we talked about this, and they're like, no, that's not what I understood.
It's so true.
It's very difficult.
How many times have I had that conversation? Okay, so we talked about this a little bit earlier, but I want to make a point of it. Keep goodwill in the deal. People are going to get upset, but you as the agent don't have to mirror or internalize that emotional state. So keep goodwill in the deal. Remain objective so that you can help get this thing to closing. So when somebody tell them this and they can do this and they did this, blah, 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 because again, they're in that defensive, high emotional state. You don't have to take that and then basically dump that on the other agent or dump that on the other party or internalize that emotion. Your job is to remain cool, calm, collected, distill the information into something that is workable, right? So keep goodwill in the deal. Don't fire off angry texts. Don't fire off angry emails. Even though you might get emotional from time to time. Okay. So remove that harsh language. Okay. The other thing, and this is especially pertinent as it pertains to your friends, you got to give people a pass. If someone fires something off at you, by the way, when something goes wrong in a transaction, it is always your fault, right? They're going to attack you. Even if they're attacking the other agent, the other party, that's going to be all that harsh language and anger is going to be directed at you. And if you get defensive or you argue back with them, you're going to kill the goodwill it's going to mess up the relationship between you and the client. But the other thing is just understanding that they're in that high emotional state and just forget about it, right? As much as you can, dump it, let it go, right? And even if they said something really mean, you don't just let it go.
Yeah. You'll all run into a client where, you know, they say something, you know, harsh, and you just, if you just respond with goodwill,
yeah,
you know, they'll probably back off, and next time they come to you, it'll probably be a lot, you know, nicer the next time. But how many of you encountered a client that did that, though? They're like, you're the worst agent ever. I want to leave this relationship. And the next thing you know, like, oh, thank you for doing that for me. Like 10 minutes later.
Exactly. And, you know, look, if you've got friends, right, your friend is not your friend in the transaction. They are your client. And so that's going to be handled completely differently. And I think about this. One of my best friends is a dentist. But I don't want him to be my best friend when I'm sitting in the dental chair and he's working on a cavity or put a cap in or a root canal, right? I want him to be a professional dentist. Even though we can goof off as friends, right? I want him to be a professional when we're in that situation. Same thing for you. You can have friends in this business and you're going to do business with friends, but you've got to put a different hat on when you're dealing with them. So sometimes we can let things go if we're dealing with a friend or family member, or we're not going to be as formal, or we're not going to take time to explain things. You know, it's like, that's fine. They have to use me. But what I'm going to tell you is put a different hat on. They're your client. Be a professional.
Yep.
Okay. The other thing I remember when I was, in the Marines, we had, during boot camp, we had this period of time, which was called a field week or something, where you actually go do a job on base. So some people go to the pot shack and then they're doing dishes all day. And some people go do lawn maintenance. So fortunately, we got lawn maintenance for ours, which is a lot better than being in a hot steaming kitchen with washing dishes. So anyway, but I remember specifically that the Marine that was teaching us, he said, okay, we're mowing. He goes, if you want to mow in a straight line, don't look down, look out. Right? So pick a point out in the distance. Some of you guys, your dad cite you this, like pick a point out in the distance, focus on that. And that's going to help you keep a straight line. If you look down, you're going to be, you know, you're going to be back and forth. It's going to create a zigzag pattern. Okay. So pick a point in the distance, right? Pick a point, a goal, and then head towards that. So when you're in the middle of the transaction and you're in the middle of these really complicated conversations and you feel like things are not working, if you focus too much on the problem, you can strangle the deal. But if you focus on getting to closing, right, and keep that closing, in your vision, right, and keep moving that and keep envisioning it, you're going to come up with solutions. Okay. So don't, as hard as it's going to be, you want to basically, it's like you want to drill down and fix problems. And, as soon as they pop up and it's like, you know, if you can kind of remain above it, right, keep your eye on the goal and keep it moving forward, no matter what, just keep it moving forward. You're going to be that much more likely to get to closing.
Yep.
And that's a little bit, I understand, obscure. It's a little bit vague, but what I tell realtors is like, hey, listen, whenever you get into a really difficult position in the deal, close your eyes, think about shaking hands at closing, right? Just envision that. And then that will help you kind of solve the problems along the way. It's like, hey, look, it's going to work out. We're going to figure this out.
Yeah. The way I find that this happens the most often is when you develop great rapport with the agent on the other side early in the transaction.
Yeah.
Because then you've got two professionals out there trying to solve problems and get a deal to the closing table. And that's when you're winning. That's when they're working with their clients to keep, you know, emotions subdued so that they can get to the closing table. You're doing the same on your side, and you're both coming up with great solutions for your clients and for the deal. And I think that the earlier in the transaction that you can reach out and let the other agent know that, hey, we're on the same side, we want the same thing, the better off you'll be.
Exactly. Okay. Any final thoughts wrap this up?
Yeah. Just that. I mean, just that you have to work well with the other agent. The other agent is your friend, not your enemy.
Yeah.
So many agents want to say that we're in competition. You're not. You want the same thing, exactly the same thing. So treat it as such.
Yeah, and I would just say that the art of making the deal come together really is in the remaining objective and as much as you can to subdue that high emotional response to get off the roller coaster. So while your clients may be doing the up and down roller coaster, if you stay, hey, steady and move towards the closing, it's going to go that much better for you in the midst of the transaction. And again, present solutions with the problem.
And if you're a highly emotional person, you may be doing this on the inside, yeah. but you just have to be like this on the outside. You have That's to right. be a rock for your client. Understand that, hey, we're going to be able to solve most any problem. And even if we can't, even if the deal busts, because it will
yeah.
sometimes.
Sometimes it does.
There's a solution there too. You can get back on the market, you can get it sold. You may, and sometimes it may work out even better for your clients. You never know. I've had that happen too.
I mean, I would say in most scenarios, you get to the end of it, they're like, oh, I'm so glad it worked out the way it did. And yeah. it's...
I mean, sometimes, you know, if you would have stayed with that deal, your clients would have lost thousands of more dollars trying to get it right for that other yeah. buyer or seller. And you know, instead, just to put it back on the market, get a better offer and move on. I mean, you just never know. Like, there's a reason why deals bust. And sometimes it's for the best. A lot of times it's for the best. Yeah.
So stay cool, calm, and collected. Guys, thank you so much. Please, again, take time to like, subscribe. Leave a review, please. Follow us on Instagram, and we'll see you next week.